appearances?
Yes, it's Deputy Ethics Counsel Hillary Horton on behalf of the New Jersey Office of Attorney Ethics.
John McGill, McGill Law Practice, on behalf of the respondent, Conrad Benedetto.
And we've already established Mr. Benedetto is online and able to hear us, and we can hear him. Let's begin with Ms. Horton, please. And I'd ask everybody else who's not speaking, well, Mr. McGill, I think it's just you and me and perhaps one justice, to put yourself on mute until we reach that time where you're addressing us.
May it please the court. This matter is before the court on an order to show cause following a motion for final discipline. Respondent pleaded guilty to three counts of failure to file a tax return for years 2016, 2017, and 2018, and one count of failure to pay payroll taxes for the second, third, and fourth quarters of tax year 2017. As part of plea negotiations, restitution was set by stipulation at $425,000, and the tax loss was stipulated to be $715,000. In conformity with its original position, the OAE recommends discipline of a retroactive suspension in the range of 18 months to 2 years, arguing, as it did below, that a suspension on the higher end, 2 years, is more appropriate. The suspension should be run retroactive to respondent's temporary suspension of February 1st, 2023. The OAE also agrees with the recommendation of the four DRB members, the ones that recommended suspension, that prior to reinstatement, respondent demonstrate that he has fully satisfied his restitution obligation to the federal government or has at least complied with a repayment plan. Failure to file tax returns typically results in a six-month suspension for a single tax year count. And those cases in support of that proposition are In Re Hand, In Re Gaskins, In Re Silverman, In Re Doyle, and In Re Leahy and In Re Chester from 1990. Failure to pay over payroll taxes can result in its own discipline, ranging from a reprimand to disbarment, depending on the circumstances of the offense and the offender. For example, if criminal charges are involved, as they were here, suspension to disbarment can become appropriate. And the case in support of that is In Re Esposito, which is 96 NJ 122-184, where six-month suspension was imposed for one count of failing to pay payroll taxes with mitigating factors. Here, respondent admitted as part of his plea that he failed to file tax returns in 2006, 2007, and 2018. He also admitted that he failed to pay his payroll taxes for three quarters of tax year 2017. Did not plead guilty to tax evasion or failing to make false or fraudulent statements on a tax return. The OAE, however, acknowledges the seriousness of respondent's conduct and the DRB decision in which five members recommended disbarment and four members recommended a three-year retroactive suspension. In the view of the Office of Attorney Ethics and consistent with its position in In Re Gilmore, 257 NJ 353-2024, and other cases where the OAE determined not to pursue discipline against a respondent for tax evasion where the jury had deadlocked on that charge. The OAE here, the Office of Attorney Ethics here, continues to recommend a two-year suspension as appropriate in consideration of the criminal charges to which respondent admitted guilt in his plea. If there are no questions, the Office of Attorney Ethics will submit the case to the court for its consideration.
Questions, anyone? Thank you. Mr. McGill.
Chief Justice and Honorable Justices of the Supreme Court, may it please the court. Respondent petitions the court to review the disbarment sanction recommended by the five-member majority board. Here, respondent relies upon his brief before the court in support of his assertion that the majority board determined in error to recommend disbarment based upon its unwarranted and overreaching analysis of the factual record. By contrast, a four-member minority board voted to impose a three-year retroactive suspension, thereby demonstrating that the narrow majority disbarment recommendation is not compelling and reflects divergent consensus among the board as to the level of the perceived egregiousness of respondents' misconduct. In this motion for final discipline matter, respondent pled guilty in federal court to three counts of failure to file a tax return and one count of failure to pay payroll taxes due. Respondent agreed to pay restitution of $425,463 and agreed that the stipulated tax loss was $715,746. The record reflects that although on August 29, 2023, Judge Beadlestone sentenced respondent to a concurrent term of 24 months imprisonment, by order dated February 22, 2024, respondent's sentence was reduced to 18 months. Before the court, respondent agrees with the OEE's recommendation that he receive a suspension in the range of 18 months to 2 years, retroactive to February 1st, 2023, the date of his temporary suspension. Respondent also agrees with the condition that prior to reinstatement, he demonstrate that he is compliant with a restitution repayment plan approved by the federal government. In fact, according to respondent, that condition is currently being met. In mitigation of sentence, at sentencing, Judge Beadlestone noted the respondent's acceptance of responsibility. Respondent also cooperated with law enforcement authorities by entering into the plea agreement. Here, respondent agrees with the OE that disbarment is not appropriate and that respondent's conduct was less egregious than the attorney in N. Ray Gottsman, who received the 3-year retroactive suspension. Notably here, unlike the attorney in Gottsman, there is no clear and convincing evidence that respondent used his attorney trust account with intent to conceal the true extent of his income from the IRS. Moreover, here, there is no clear proof that respondent practiced any intended deception upon the IRS. As set forth in our brief, respondent submits that his unethical conduct is less egregious than that of the attorneys in Ray Long, in Ray Gottsman, and Matter of Gilmore. Respondent appears today ready and willing to address the court if granted the opportunity. With that, I stand ready to address any questions the court may have. Thank you.
Mr. McGill, in your brief, you make it quite clear, and you just reiterated it now, that respondent didn't believe that his tax returns were false when he filed them. What did he believe? What did he believe about the accuracy and completeness of these returns?
Well, Justice Radner, this, as you know, this matter proceeded by way of the plea agreement. There, the underlying facts of the indictment were not litigated. I was not respondent's criminal attorney at the time that the plea was entered. And as I indicated in my brief, if the matter went to trial, respondent would intend to submit evidence to poor record keeping and accounting mistakes. That's the best I can answer at this point.
This is not a criminal proceeding, of course. We're not redoing what took place in district court. We're trying to assess what the impact of his behavior should be with respect to his law license in New Jersey. And that's why I ask, what is he telling us today? Set aside the plea proceeding.
He thought the information he submitted was accurate. It turned out it was inaccurate. That's the best I can respond to the court, that he thought it was accurate and his accounting was accurate. It turned out there were accounting mistakes and he was not compliant with his record keeping, which led to mistakes.
And does that apply to the years for which he filed no tax returns, when he earned legal fees of more than $1 million and had more than $8 million in gross receipts?
Well, in those matters, he did not file. So, your question was, what did he believe when he did file? That's the way I understood
Why didn't he file returns for 2016, 17, and 18 with millions of dollars crossing over to him for his law practice?
Well, I would submit, Chief Justice, had this matter gone to hearing, respondent would have offered to admit evidence to demonstrate where he relied unreasonably on his staff. I mean, as the record shows, he made, I believe it was $1 million a year for 8 years. He's a sole practitioner. Respondent was grossly involved in the practice of law and in generating that income. In terms of his staff, he had a staff and he had problems with his staff. I hesitate to mention this, but maybe I need to on behalf of respondent, as the court may be aware, there was an investigation that ended up being dismissed, but before it was dismissed, we appeared before the court. It involved a matter with an employee. It was a publication in the newspaper, which brought it to the OAE's attention. The OAE was looking to see if respondent had violated unethical conduct in various mass tragedy matters. That all of that investigation ended up being dismissed, but it began as a result of an employee committing improper conduct. And of course, he was an employee of respondent. There's more to that story. And again, I'm hesitating because those facts are not in the record. But again, this dismissal and the fact that it was brought to the court's attention as a result of newspaper reporting, based on the conduct of that employee, I offered that as just support that there were problems. And again, respondent, it's his office. He's a fiduciary. The buck stops with him. He realizes that now. He realizes he has to have a tighter control of his law practice. All I'm suggesting is that there are other issues related to, why respondent was did not have his finger on the pulse of his tax filings and the like. It had to do with, the way he was running his office, and that's the best I can say.
So if I understand, the underreporting of taxes in the years that he filed and the failure to report altogether for several years, much of the responsibility, according to him, lies with his staff.
No, it's his responsibility. The buck stops with him. It relies on his over-reliance on his staff, and he had someone in his staff that really hurt him. But again, he relied on this person to his detriment, and he relied on the staff more than he should have. He's not suggesting he's not responsible here. It's but there were problems that he's corrected, and they do involve his over-reliance on staff.
I have one more line of questioning. You're correct that the judge credited him under the sentencing guidelines for acceptance of responsibility, but the judge went on to make certain pointed findings, and I'll quote from the record. Even in a letter to the court expressing shame and remorse for what he did, he could not bring himself to clearly accept responsibility, suggesting rather that he was reckless in doing so and suggesting that his crimes are simply errors of omission. He says he, quote, disregarded his obligations, end quote. My concerns, the judge speaking, is that he minimizes his criminal conduct, saying it happened because he wasn't paying attention, because his contingency practice made him late to file returns and to pay taxes. Is there any reason for this court not to accept the federal judge's findings in that regard?
Well, respondent, in fact, does want to address that. We are aware that because of Judge Beadlestone's finding and the DRB concern about those comments, I advised the respondent that that probably would be an issue in front of the court. And he's prepared to address that, Chief Justice.
Very well.
He does accept responsibility. He went to prison. He pled guilty. But I would defer to respondent to speak on his own behalf in that regard, with hopes that his sincere he can convince the court of his sincerity. He does accept responsibility. He made mistakes, and again, his reliance on his staff is part of the mistakes. He knows that. He knows he cannot do that further, and the buck stops with him. He's not trying to blame anybody else, but he did make decisions that it did involve others, which led to this. But it is all finally, the buck stops with him, and I believe he's ready to stand before the court and indicate his acceptance, full acceptance of that responsibility.
We're prepared to hear from him, as I mentioned at the outset. Is there other questions anyone has? Anything you'd like to add before we turn to your client, Mr. McGill?
No, sir, not at this time.
Thank you. Mr. Benedetto.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Your Honorable Chief Justice and members of the Honorable Court, while I appreciate those who have tried to help me over the years try to mitigate, present arguments mitigating my actions, all I want this court to understand is that throughout this process and journey that I've experienced, I took full accountability. I understand and I know and I acknowledge the seriousness of my actions. I didn't try to shift blame at any time onto anyone else, and I still stand in that same position. I do not shift blame anyone other than myself. I'm an attorney. I should have known better. I went through a bad time, and that's not an excuse for what my actions were. And I've come to realize that. I would say when the court looks at what Judge Beadlestone's comments were during the time of my sentencing, after I self-surrendered to the federal prison camp at Fairton in Fairton, New Jersey, there was an opportunity to request of Judge Beadlestone that my sentence be reduced. I think she took into consideration what I had done, the accountability I took, cooperation that I participated in, and she did find it in her heart to give me a second chance. She reduced my sentence to 18 months. And that's what I look to this court for, is a second chance. I believe that this court will do what it thinks is best, what it thinks is fair, and I'm hoping that in its wisdom and judgment, it allows me a second chance. I've lost everything. All I knew was for 42 years practicing law. And I would like to think that on behalf of the clients, I did that well. I had their interests at heart. And I did not harm any of my clients, to the best of my knowledge. Maybe I harmed them in that I disappointed them. And I know that my actions did put the perception of attorneys in a bad light. And I recognize that. And I hope that if I am given a second chance, I will make sure that I do everything in my power to dispel that perception as best I can. And that's the most I can say at this point.
I don't want to stop you until you're finished, Mr. Benedetto, please. Anything else?
I'm finished, Your Honor. No, I'm finished.
You mentioned that the judge reduced your sentence to 18 months. Based on her reflection after the positive steps you had taken and the giving of a second chance, I understood that there was a modification to the sentencing guidelines and that that was the reason that your sentence was reduced. to reflect the change in the guidelines. Am I incorrect?
I'm not certain, Your Honor. When I was sentenced, we presented that to the judge, to Judge Beadlestone, and the modification was from a range of 24 to 30 months down to a range of 18 to 24 months. She sentenced me to 24 months, which was the upper end of the new guideline. However, in February, after I had served approximately 2 to 3 months, she did reduce my sentence further to 18 months. So I'd like to think that she felt that possibly because of the accountability I took, cooperation, my acceptance of responsibility, she did reduce it even further to the 18 months.
What was the basis for you returning to court?
Excuse me, Your Honor, I'm sorry.
What was the basis for the judge to revisit your sentence?
The Federal Community Defender's Office reached out to me and had indicated that they were assigned to review all zero criminal history offenders that had been sentenced recently, and that a committee, which was made up of a representative from the Federal Community Defender, the Bureau of Prisons, and the U.S. Attorney's Office, reviewed my case, and they had agreed that my sentence should have been 18 months rather than 24 months.
Why?
They presented that to Judge. Why?
Yes.
I can't say, Your Honor. That's just simply what was reported to me.
Not because of a change in the sentencing guidelines range?
That was not the basis of the letter. They just indicated that they believed that my sentence should have been 18 months instead of 24 months.
I'll ask Ms. Horton.
With that said, that was brought to Judge Beadlestone's attention because ultimately she had to make the final decision on whether to reduce my sentence from 24 months to 18 months. And she graciously reduced my sentence.
Is there anything else you'd like to add? I wanted to check something in the record, so bear with me, but I'm happy to have you address anything else you'd like to present.
I there's nothing else I would like to present. However, if there's any questions, I would be happy to respond to or address any questions the court has of me.
Ms. Horton, can you address the basis for the reduction in sentence? Was it because of a change in the guidelines or something else? You have to unmute.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. Yes, my understanding is that it was a change in the guidelines for like 0 point offenders, meaning they did not have previous criminal history. Mr. McGill had made the motion to supplement the record with the documentation from those proceedings to reduce respondent's sentence to 18 months. But yes, I think it was all offenders who had that 0 point previous criminal history were eligible for sentence reduction. So there was not something, I guess, maybe profoundly unique about this respondent that made him eligible for that, to my knowledge.
Mr. McGill, and I'll give you Mr. Benedetto an opportunity again. Anything you'd like to say in response?
Well, only that it still appears that it was Judge Beadlestone had the discretion to reduce the sentence. That's my understanding, that she still didn't have to reduce the sentence, and she chose to. That's my understanding, and if I'm correct, that's the only comment I would make.
Mr. Benedetto, is there anything you'd like to add?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. Court's in recess for the day.